más oportunidades. Sigue entrenando tu inglés con tu mejor entrenador, un profesor Vaughan. ¿Por qué no aprovechas también ahora la hora de comer para poner en forma tu inglés? Apúntate a un curso de inglés trimestral por videoconferencia. Seguro que siempre has querido probar el famoso método Vaughan, pero no hay un centro Vaughan en tu ciudad. ¡Voilà! Aquí tenemos la solución ideal para ti. El método Vaughan en una clase por videoconferencia, con los profesores mejor formados para subir un peldaño tu nivel de inglés. Disfruta de todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan ahora en videoconferencia y en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Nuestra avanzada tecnología permite que nuestras clases por videoconferencia tengan la misma velocidad e intensidad que una clase en el aula. En tan solo un par de clics podrás acceder a la plataforma y empezar tu clase. Y recuerda, prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿A qué esperas? Entra ahora en grupovaughan.com/clases videoconferencia. Fácil, cómodo y muy eficaz. Sigue poniendo en forma tu inglés.
¿Quieres apuntarte a un curso de inglés y no sabes cuál escoger? ¿Por qué no probar nuestro curso trimestral de Vaughan? Son solo 3 meses, no pierdes nada y te aseguramos que vas a ganar mucho. 3 meses en los que podrás ver cuál es tu nivel real de inglés. 3 meses en los que trabajarás tu listening y speaking en todo momento. 3 meses en los que subirás ese nivel tanto que, pues, que querrás otros 3 meses y otros 3. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Vaughan.
¿Ha tenido un posible contagio de COVID o quiere evitarlos? ¿Necesita viajar o visitar a algún familiar? Por su tranquilidad o por la seguridad de sus seres queridos, en Laboratorios LifeLength realizamos pruebas PCR con informe de resultados en el mismo día y test rápido de antígenos y de anticuerpos con resultados en 15 minutos en Madrid. Pida su cita online en citacovid.com. Recuerde, citacovid.com.
Remember to follow us on social media to get all the latest information on all our offers and special deals.
You're listening to The Drive Time Show with Kyle Miller.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Drive Time Show right here on Vaughan Radio. My name is Kyle Miller. Thank you for joining me. Thanks for tuning in. And before I move on to anything new, I want to take a look back at the start of the show. We had our Twitter translation. I asked you at home to translate the following. I said, ¿Cómo se dice en inglés? How would you say in English? Tengo perro, pero no tengo gatos. And the correct translation is, I have a dog, but I don't have any cat. Pero no tengo gatos. So, because it's plural, no tengo gatos, I don't have any cats, the any goes with the plural, and the plural goes with the any. It sounds strange, but think of it that way. The any, I don't have any cats. Tengo un perro, or simply, tengo perro, I have a dog, it's singular, so a. I have a dog, but I don't have cats. You could say, but it's more common to use any in front of the plural when it's negative. I don't have any. I don't have any cats. Or even if it's uncountable, I have Coca-Cola, but I don't have Pepsi. I have water, but I don't have any milk. I have Coca-Cola, but I don't have any Pepsi, I should say. A little bit more common to use the any, although not essential in common speech, but a little bit more common. So I would say the best answer here is, I have a dog, but I don't have any cats. Now, the word perro in English, perro in Spanish is a little bit difficult for English speakers to pronounce, that rolling R. But sometimes the word dog is difficult for Spanish speakers to pronounce. Say it with me, dog. I hope you're not saying dog. 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 Greg. My friend has a dog named Greg. Greg the dog. Greg the dog. G, g. So you have to create the G sound by sealing off, momentarily closing the back of the throat. Dog. Dog. G. If you say go, g, 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 You hit that G, you have to hit the G again. It's not doch. For some reason that I don't understand, a lot of people, when a G comes at the end of the word, like dog, Greg, they will say doch, grech. But no, dog, Greg, dog. I have a dog, but I don't have any cats. I have a dog, but I don't have any cats. Let's pay special attention. Try to think about this for the next few days that you're speaking English. Try to think about the ends of the words and making sure that they're pronounced fully and completely. Like Madrid. I live in Madrid. If you are from Madrid and you go to Vancouver, or you go to Chicago, or you go to Manchester, and you say, oh, I live in Madrid. People will say, what, Madrid? What is Madrid? Where is that? What country is Madrid? I don't know what that means. Because the D has to be pronounced. You can't say Madrid. No, Madrid. I live in Madrid. Madrid. It has to be pronounced. Okay? All right, so anyway, let's push on, everybody. We've got lots to talk about in this half hour. So let's keep pushing forward with some weird news. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for today's weird news. Weird news. This is an interesting story. I heard this story a couple of times from a couple different people. A few different people this week, how a mysterious monolith was found in southwest Utah in the United States. Now, a monolith, like a strange kind of monument sticking up out of the ground. As authorities in Utah say, they are investigating the origins of a mysterious monolith spotted, right? Seen. Spotted means seen. Discovered, sticking out of the ground in a rural area, una zona rural, in the southwestern part of the state. Now, the Utah Department of Public Safety said that members of the Aero Bureau were in a helicopter helping to count sheep, bighorn sheep, for the State Division of Wildlife Resources when they spotted something far more unusual on the ground. The pilot, a guy named Bert Hutchings, said a silver-colored metal monolith was seen sticking out of the ground in the middle of some red rocks. He said the structure appeared to be 10 to 12 feet high and seemed to have been intentionally planted rather than dumped out of an aircraft. So he said that the scene was kind of reminiscent of the black monolith from the 1968 film 2001, A Space Odyssey. The pilot said he suspects the monolith is the work of an artist rather than extraterrestrials. He says, I'm assume it's some new wave artist or something. You know, somebody that was a big fan of the movie 2001, Space Odyssey. The Department of Public Safety said an investigation into the object's origins is ongoing. As they say, it is in fact illegal to install structures or art without the authorization of the government on federally managed public lands, no matter what planet you're from, he said. So it's illegal. So who put it there? What is it? Is it art? And why was it put there and when? So some questions have been raised, and I've seen this article, maybe you've seen it too, over the last few days in numerous places. It's like a shiny, almost like a, it's not a cylinder, but like a pole, but with maybe squared sides or triangular, just coming up out of the ground. And they just don't know where it came from. They're wondering what the heck it is. And I'm kind of wondering as well. I'm going to be following this story to try to figure out what this thing is. Anyway, it's time to answer some questions from you, the listener.
request. Inglés a la carta.
My request, that's right, it is that time of the show where you're the boss, where you call the shots, where you tell me what you want me to answer, you ask the question, and I try my best to answer them. We have Jesus writing in. By the way, you can write to me on Instagram, I'm Kyle Miller, on Twitter, I'm Kyle Miller, or on my Facebook group, English with Kyle. By the way, the group is free. If you have Facebook and you want to improve your English, be sure to join the free group. English with Kyle, K-Y-L-E-K-Y-L-E, que es mi nombre, Kyle, K-Y-L-E-K-Y-L-E, English with Kyle, the free Facebook group, and I will put extra videos in there, extra classes, extra content, PDF exercises, audios, lots of discussion, and also I will film after the show today. I will do a free extra video today on Instagram, my Instagram account. I'm Kyle Miller, and I will post it into the Facebook group. So make sure that you are in the Facebook group to get that free extra class that I put most days, a free class there in the Facebook group, English with Kyle. And Jesus has written in. You can write in the group as well. He said, anyway, he says, my question for your show is about two words that I always confuse. Degree, carrera, titulación, and career, carrera o vida laboral. Is that the right translation? He says, well, he's got it, really. He says, the second one confuses me when I'm speaking about it. Could you explain how we use both words? Okay, sure. Well, I think you figured it out. When you say carrera, de formación, lo que has estudiado, lo que estudiaste, you have a degree. So the degree is like the official title of the course that you studied in a university. If you get a degree, then you meet the course requirements for the program for the carrera de formación, right? That's a degree. That's a degree. Whereas, so carrera de titulación and career. So not the same as career. A career is your, what you work in. So a career is a bit more than a job. Some people say, well, I worked in a supermarket. Some people have a career in the supermarket, but I did not have a career in the supermarket. I worked there just for a few years in a very basic job. Well, actually for 1 year in a very basic job when I was 16. Con 16 años. I worked in a supermarket. I wouldn't call it a career. It could become a career. There's nothing wrong with that. But a career is something you do for a job you do for a long period of time when you dedicate it and you're dedicated to it and you say, this is what I want to do. And typically within that, your professional trajectory, let's say. Your career is your professional journey, your professional trajectory, which may or may not have anything to do with what you study. Usually, people typically study things and get a degree in something that they hope to have a career in. But for example, I have a degree in finance, but I don't have a career in finance. I've worked in finance for a while, but now I work as a radio host and I do other things, but I don't have a career in finance. If you study dentistry and then you go and work as a dentist, you have a career in dentistry. You have a career as a dentist. But maybe you have a degree in dentistry. For example, in my hometown, there was a dentist. He worked as a dentist, and he had a degree in dentistry, but then he quit, and he became a manager of a shrimp processing plant. He had a career in the food business, but a degree in dentistry. So these are often the same. They may be the same, but they may not, right? So these are different, completely different meanings. So your career is what you work in. Your degree is a degree which you may or may not have, but you can get it. You can earn a university degree by studying the course requirements in that area. Okay? So I hope that answers your question, Jesus. And we have another one. Oh, it's Konsu says, Dear Kyle, can you tell me the difference between get over and overcome? Are they the same? Oh, they're very similar. They're like superar. But to overcome is more profound. Get over is like, bueno, mejorar. And I would say overcome is superar. Algo más grande. You know, something more significant. Like, we are trying to overcome racism in the world. We are trying to overcome problems with inequality. We are trying to overcome profound problems in society. But first, I have to get over my cold. Right? Mi resfriado. I wouldn't say I'm going to overcome my cold. It's too profound. Overcome is almost poetic. It is much more profound. You can say, I have to get over my cold. I have to get over a broken heart. Yeah, sometimes it takes time to get over, to recuperate, to get mejorar, to get better from. Okay? So, yeah. Overcome your fears. Overcome your physical limitations. Overcome emotional adversity, challenges, setbacks. Okay, but these are major things. More general. Whereas you get over, very specific and typically smaller individual things you get over is like to recuperate, recover from, return to your state of health in a certain area. Okay, get over a cold, get over sickness, get over a broken heart, like I said. Get over I had a sore knee, but I got over it eventually by resting it. Okay, that was Konsu. Thank you for your question, Konsu. Thank you very much. And remember, friends, you can send me a question anytime, night or day. I'm always here for you. Instagram, I'm Kyle Miller. Twitter, I'm Kyle Miller. And if I don't get back to you, some people say, Kyle, I wrote to you and you didn't answer me. Well, I try my best. I try my best. So if I don't answer you right away, please be patient. Or if a week goes by, then remind me, because sometimes I miss the messages. Let's look at our expression of the day.
Expression of the day.
Expression of the day. Give me a hand. To give someone a hand. Now, there's actually two meanings here. Echarle una mano. Hey, assist him. Give him a hand. Give him assistance. So this is easy, right? To give someone a hand. My father was working outside. My father was trimming his vines. Tiene viñas. He has like some vines, some grape vines, and he was cutting them back for the winter. And I helped him. I gave him a hand. He said, Kyle, can you give me a hand? ¿Me ayudas con poco con eso? And I said, sure, no problem. I'll give you a hand. Similar to the Spanish. But we have another meaning, which is to give to applaud someone. Give him a hand. Ladies and gentlemen, give him a hand. And you go, ¡Sí! Unos aplausos para Pedro. Oh, Pedro. Let's give Pedro a hand. Some people at home are saying, ah, qué curioso, no sabía. Or some people are saying, claro, I heard that. So to give someone a hand can mean to applaud them, or it can also mean to assist, to help, right? Assist, help them. Different meanings. I thought I'd talk about this today because it had me thinking yesterday with this week, the passing of Maradona, and that they called it the hand of God, that famous goal. I thought, I'll link it together and I'll talk about a hand. I say, ah, Kyle, qué listo, right? Okay. Now, it's time to go back in time, everybody. I like to do this almost every day. Learn something new through English. So you're thinking about another topic and you don't realize you're thinking about English. You're thinking in English. You're learning something new, a little bit of history. So let's just do that. Let's do that, exactly that, as we go back in time with Today in History.
Today in history.
All right, everybody, it was 500 years ago today. 500 years ago that Magellan reached the Pacific after finding a passage. Magellan. I think you call him Magellan? 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 I'm not sure. Anyway, in English, Magellan. He sailed through the dangerous straits, Los Estrechos, below South America, that now have his name, the Strait of Magellan. Portuguese navigator Ferdinand Magellan entered the Pacific Ocean with three ships and became the first European explorer to reach the Pacific from the Atlantic. So he left from Spain, as explorers love to do around that time, in September of 1519, and he set sail from southern Spain in an effort to find a western sea route to the Spice Islands of Indonesia. In command of five ships and 270 men, he sailed to West Africa and then to Brazil, where he searched the South American coast for a strait that would take him to the Pacific. He searched the Rio de la Plata, a large estuary, they call it, in the south of Brazil for a way through. But he failed there and continued south along the coast of Patagonia. And at the end of March in 1520, the expedition set up winter quarters at Port St. Julian. Now, on Easter Day at midnight, the captains mutinied against their captain. But Magellan stopped the revolt. This is where they say, we're going to kill the captain. We don't like him. We disagree. And they try to kill him. But he managed to resist. He executed one of the captains and left another on the shore when they left St. Julian in August. Then on October 21st, he finally discovered the strait that he had been looking for. The Strait of Magellan, they would eventually call it. Located near the tip of South America, separating Tierra del Fuego, the continental mainland. Only three ships entered the passage. One had been wrecked, and another one deserted. It took 38 days to navigate the strait, El Estrecho. And when ocean was seen at the other side, Magellan cried. He said, oh my gosh, and he started to cry. His fleet had accomplished the westward crossing in 99 days, crossing waters very, very calm, in fact. That the ocean, it was very, very peaceful and calm when they arrived. So they said, bueno, let's call it Pacific, como Pacifico, Pacific, right? From the Latin word Pacificus, in Spanish, Pacifico, tranquilo, tranquil. And by the end, the men were out of food. They had nothing to eat. They were chewing on leather to keep themselves alive. And in March of 1521, the expedition landed at the island of Guam. So this was later on. They were finding some food on the local islands by then, and they made it through to Guam 10 days later. They dropped anchor at the Philippine port of Cebu. And they were only 400 miles from the Spice Islands that they hoped to reach. And Magellan met with a chief of Cebu. And after converting to Christianity, he persuaded the Europeans to help him in conquering a rival tribe on the neighboring island of Mactan. So this guy became friends with Magellan. He said, all right, I'll become a Christian. And he asked Magellan and his crew to go to war with him. And they were fighting against this other tribe. And Magellan himself was hit by a poisoned arrow. And he was left to die. His colleagues took off. They said, this is too intense. They pulled out of there, and Magellan basically died there in the Philippines. So close. Now, after his death, the survivors, in two ships, they continued on They loaded up the ships with spice. One tried it unsuccessfully to return across the Pacific. They tried to go across the Pacific, but the other ship, the Victoria, continued west under the command of the Basque navigator, Elcano, and they sailed across the Indian Ocean around Cape of Good Hope, and they got back to Spain. And they arrived back in Spain on September 6th, 1522, becoming the first ship to ever circumnavigate the globe to sail around the world. Fascinating stuff. A wonderful bit of history going back 500 years. Wow. Just like that, going back 500 years. Incredible. All right. Well, there you have it. I think that's a pretty good place to finish our show today and finish for the week. I want to remind you just one more time of the opportunity you have for some great deals by going to GrupoVon.com and taking advantage of our Black Friday promotion with lots of deals, 10% off video conference classes, 20% off some other products, book collections on sale, great prices that you might not see again for a while. So I would, if you're considering getting serious about your English, take some initiative with this one. Go to GrupoVon.com and take advantage of our Black Friday deals. Now's the time. I am going to finish there, folks, but I will be going on Instagram in a few minutes. In unos minutos, I'll be on Instagram where I will give a little review class, un repaso en directo, live on Instagram. You can join me there. You can interact. You can ask me questions. I will answer them. You can chat with me there, and I will be there to review today's content of the show, and also I will put that into my free Facebook group. Like I said, it's called English with Kyle. Be sure to join. It's completely free for classes almost casi a diario, almost daily there on in the Facebook group for free, English with Kyle, K-Y-L-E. But I am done for today, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Make the most of it. Have fun. Stay safe. And I'll see you on the other side. Bye-bye.